and startled, she looked up. She was right underneath the opaque window. She frowned. Had it come from there? It was too far to see, but that would mean there was a leak.
"What's the matter?" called Howard.
"I think we've got a leak." He swam over and stared up at the ceiling.
"What? We've only just got the tiles repaired, bloody next-door builders.
I'll get in touch with them." Later, as she and Howard sat at the table, she tentatively broached the subject. "By the way, I spoke with Cherry a few weeks ago."
"Yes? What day has she been visiting?"
Laura hid her trembling hands under the table. "She's moved on." He put down his glass of wine.
"What?"
"Yes, I'm afraid she came to the decision just after she returned from holiday."
"That was ages ago. You didn't mention it."
"I didn't think it important. Too caught up in Daniel, you know. The bad news we thought we had."
"So she doesn't know he's come round?"
"No, she does. That's why I called her." It was another lie. Her fourth now. One was breeding another.
"Does he know?"
"I haven't brought it up, and he hasn't mentioned her. But I think he may have guessed." She paused. "I think we need to protect him. If he does say something, I think it might be easier to take if he thinks she walked away some months ago." Howard was silent for a moment, angry at what his son still had to go through, then nodded. For a moment, Laura couldn't quite believe how easy it was. Then she breathed a silent sigh of relief and pushed the whole thing to the back of her mind. 2 months after regaining consciousness, Daniel finished his physio session, and after getting back into his chair, he sat back exhausted. It hurt him. She could see that in his eyes, and she was about to tell him how well he was doing when he spoke first.
"Where's Cherry?"
A thick layer of dread stuck in her throat. This was her chance, the moment she could put things right. She could just say something about Cherry giving him space to recover, that she was dying to see him. She could tell Cherry, what, that she'd been delirious, deranged with grief that her son had been given only a day or two to live. Life had taken on a new joy, a new purpose, since Daniel had come back to her. It was as if something or someone had decided at the very last second not to take away her remaining child, despite her failing to keep her promise. Because she had failed. She'd said she would protect him, never let anything happen to him, and in return he would be kept safe. No carelessness like with Rose, no misjudged calls. That had been the deal, and she'd failed to keep her side of it. She'd invited Cherry into the family. Yes, Daniel was dating her, but Laura had encouraged it without even a thought to who the girlfriend was. She'd asked her to come to France. God, at one point she'd even looked upon her as some sort of surrogate daughter. Laura shuddered. She'd failed so abysmally, and yet had been given another chance. What kind of mother was she if she just let Cherry waltz back in again? She suddenly sat up straight. Was she mad? How many warnings did she need to get?
"She's not been to see you for a while," she said regretfully, pained.
It wasn't a lie, but it wasn't the whole truth either. The look on his face told her everything. He'd deducted that she'd left him when he was in a coma. He stared out the window for a bit, and Laura looked away, feeling awful. She had a sudden urgent impulse to tell him it wasn't true, but the seconds ticked on, and she said nothing. Daniel continued to improve and didn't mention Cherry again, but Laura still worried. What if he tried to get hold of her? Once, when they were in the hospital gardens, taking a slow walk because his leg muscles were still so wasted, she tentatively brought it up. They'd been talking about his old school friends visiting that weekend, and it seemed like the right time.
"Are you going to get in touch with Cherry?"
"No."
And the subject was closed. Although she was relieved that he seemed to have moved on, part of her knew it would only take a simple call to unravel everything. His phone was in a box upstairs in her dressing room. She went home that night and was going to delete Cherry's number, just to make sure she left their lives forever, but then realized that it would look a bit odd if it was the only one gone. So she took the phone outside on the patio and smashed it, taking the SIM out and destroying that too. She stared at the pieces, and then hurriedly gathered them up and tied them in a plastic bag. She buried them under some rubbish in the trash can, glad the garbage men were coming the next day. The whole thing made her distinctly uncomfortable. The only reassurance was that she knew she was getting to the end of the fallout of her lie. The loose ends were being tied up. No one knew anyone's number by heart anymore. Everyone relied on their mobiles so much. They told their owners where to walk, whether they were going to get rained on. and they stored their contacts so that most people didn't even know the number of their own mother. Daniel was no doubt the same, and would have inputted Cherry's number into his phone once only. Not even that if she'd called him from hers and then he saved it, and he would never have dialed it again. The phone would have done the work for him. She got him a new phone, telling him the old one had gone missing somewhere from hospital to hospital. It had a new number, just in case Cherry should accidentally call him. But there was still one thing, something that made her stomach churn with worry. Cherry still worked a mere 10-minute walk from the house. If Daniel were to pass by her office, well, it didn't bear thinking about. It tormented her, kept her awake at night, and she didn't know what to do. It was the doctors who gave her the idea. It was only temporary, but it would give her some time to think. They said that Daniel was ready to go home soon, but he still had weeks of physio to do, swimming, walking, and lots of recuperation. She knew exactly what to do. They would go to France, where it was warm. Daniel agreed without a murmur, and Laura was deeply relieved. She booked their flights for the day he was discharged. 30. Monday, June 8. Daniel reached for the edge of the pool and missed. His face went underwater for a second before he lunged again, this time making contact. Ignoring the pain, he turned to do another lap. His clothes still didn't fit him properly, and there was no way he was going to buy a whole load of new ones. For one thing, the idea of having to shop for them drained him of energy, and energy was one thing he was short on right now. No, he had to put on bulk and muscle, and then he could stop hitching his jeans up over his backside, and that was with the belt on. By the time he completed his target, he was so tired he just rested his head on his arms at the side of the pool. As ever, when he wasn't distracting himself with exercise, his mind was full. He was still coming to terms with how much his life had changed. He'd woken from the coma not recognizing his surroundings, or indeed his physical self. His last memory had been the moment before the accident, of being in the raft and hurtling downstream. His job and his girlfriend, both of which he loved, had vanished. Day-to-day life had slowed to a pensioner's pace, but even if he wanted to pick it up, he physically wasn't able to handle it. It frustrated him that he was trapped inside his own body. He sighed and climbed out of the pool, throwing a towel over his shoulders. The sun was shining, and June in the Côte d'Azur was glorious. He soon chucked it off again, to bask in the warmth. He sat for a moment at the teak table, and looked down at Saint-Tropez in the distance, its russet roofs aglow in the sunshine. The whole village seemed to face the sea, something that he found both charming and reassuring. He hadn't yet gone down there, though, and they'd already been in Gassin a week. He wasn't particularly sentimental, but he was finding this trip hard. There were reminders of last summer, and Cherry. He was in the same room where they'd slept together. There would be even more reminders in Saint-Tropez. Part of the problem, he knew, was that he was having trouble accepting he'd been dumped when he didn't know how it happened, and hadn't even been mentally present. His last memories of Cherry were exceedingly happy ones, and it was as if a great chunk of his life was missing, which it was. He was torn with wanting to ring her, acting like it was all a big mistake, but then he'd remind himself that she'd given up on him. And he hadn't thought she was like that. Their relationship, however short, had felt solid. It had felt like it had longevity, that they had a future. He often wondered what he would have done if it had been the other way round, if Cherry had had the accident, and he liked to think he would have stayed with her a lot longer. So what had made her leave? Yes, he was in a coma, but his mum had said she'd disappeared before Christmas, early November, in fact, so he'd only been under for a couple of months. He wondered how she'd come to the decision. Was it easy? Did she want to be let off the hook? And then there was the thing she didn't know, that he'd come out of it. But he couldn't call her to tell her that. If she came back, he'd never know if it was because she really wanted to, or was doing it out of some sort of duty. He couldn't call her period, as his phone had gone missing somewhere in transit from the locker at the rafting centre to the various hospitals, and he didn't know her number. His stomach rumbled, and he stood and went in search of some lunch. It fascinated him how much he ate. Must be nature's way of replenishing the wasted body. He could wolf down whole baguettes loaded with butter and cheese. As he headed into the kitchen, he saw his mother at the table, reading something on her laptop. She looked worried, her brow creased. When she saw him, she plastered on a smile and pulled the screen down. "Mum, do you need to go back to work?" She hesitated, so when she spoke, Daniel knew she was lying. "Don't be silly. I can work here." He sat down opposite her. You've taken off too much time to look after me.
She started to protest, but he laid a hand on her arm.
Don't think I don't appreciate it. I wouldn't have gotten here if it hadn't been for you, but all those months in the hospital, coming out here. It's time you put yourself first for a bit.
Relief swamped her, and she was unable to hide it. To her delight, her crime drama had been greenlit, and they were due to start filming at the end of the year. That meant it was suddenly all systems go. Further episodes needed reading and editing, casting needed to be done, directors interviewed, key crew hired, locations scouted for. Not to mention she was supposed to be chasing down the builders who were supposed to be repairing the garden window, and she just couldn't do all of this from the south of France. It wasn't only work that was a distraction. The ever-present shadow of Cherry, working just down the road from their house, kept her awake, and she knew she was running out of time.
Are you absolutely sure?
Never been surer.
She put her hands on either side of his head and kissed it.
I'll come back for weekends.
You don't need...
Shush, that's a deal.
She flew home that night. It was an emotional farewell, and both blinked back the tears.
Thanks for everything, said Daniel, as they hugged tightly. I couldn't have done it without you.
I'll call you, she said, every day, just to make sure you're doing your exercises.
Once he was alone, Daniel missed her more than he thought he would. He lay in bed and, as usual, his mind turned to Cherry. He just wanted to know why she'd decided to break it off. And then an idea formed. He would call her office, speak to her there. And if it was hard, too public, then he would get her mobile number again, call her when she finished work. He felt a certain fatalistic peace once he decided what to do, although he wasn't looking forward to the conversation. He was certain he would be rejected for a second time, and twice from the same girl was hard for any man to stomach. The following morning broke warm and cloudless. He got up early and walked to the boulangerie to get a fresh baguette, then ate breakfast outside. He'd slept okay, but now that he was up and the moment to call Cherry was creeping nearer, he felt nervous. He turned on his phone and Googled the real estate agency, Highsmith and Brown. Seeing the photo of the shop exterior on the website made him more nervous still. He couldn't call yet. It was only 7 in the morning in London, and she wouldn't be at work. To pass the time and stop himself from overly rehearsing what to say, he decided to take the put-off trip into Saint-Tropez. It was easy enough to drive, as it was too early in the morning for the tourist crowd, and the traffic was refreshingly manageable. It was market day, and he found himself wandering around the busy stalls in Place d'Elysée, full of early summer vegetables, bundles of broad beans, towers of artichokes, and sweet-smelling peas in their pods. He bought a few and some early nectarines, and then, still finding physical exertion draining, sat down on a bench a couple of streets from the market. He rested in the sunshine, then checked his watch. It was 9:45. In 15 minutes, Cherry would be at her office. His heart tightened, and he looked around to take his mind off the impending call. It was then that he realized where he was. Across the street was a designer clothes shop that Cherry had said she didn't need to go into on their shopping expedition. He was sitting on the very bench where he'd left her when he'd gone running off to get lunch and her gold bangle. He sat up abruptly, the warm wood suddenly uncomfortable. Unsure of what to do for a moment, he gazed around distractedly, and then his eyes fell on the gallery. He saw a painting in the window that was unmistakably by his favourite artist, and realised that this was where she must have bought his gift. It struck him suddenly that it was odd that the gallery was right opposite the bench, as if the painting were an impulse buy. But then, he reasoned, so what if it was? He had an urge to move, to get away from the bench, and decided to go inside the gallery. The bell rang behind him, and he made his way over to the artist's collection. He stared at the paintings, the beach, the square, pine trees and the landscape. He hadn't seen his own painting for months, and assumed it was still hanging in his now vacant flat, its tear repaired, but still visible. When she'd given it to him, he'd felt a rush of love for her. It had been such an incredibly thoughtful, generous thing to do. So why had she changed? Because she most certainly had. She'd left him only 10 weeks after he'd fallen into a coma. 10 weeks. But then they'd been dating barely more than that before the accident. The paintings glowed around him, their vibrant colours and Mediterranean light prodding away at some forgotten joy that he'd felt when he first saw them. It gave him an unexpected strength, and he thought about the call he was about to make. He wondered how surprised she'd be, whether she had prepared herself for such an eventuality. She probably had. There was some stock answer as to why she decided to leave him, how hard a decision it had been,
but she'd felt like she had no choice. He shook his head at his own stupidity. What else had he expected her to say? That she had no interest in dating a coma victim. Maybe she'd met someone else. Whatever had happened, she'd been gone more than 7 months. 7 months. She'd probably forgotten all about him. He laughed, a dry realization becoming clear. For her, the breakup was a long time ago, time enough to heal and move on, as it would be for him. He suddenly knew he didn't need an explanation. No good would come out of this call. And he flinched at the idea of her hesitatingly, reluctantly suggesting that they meet, or he suddenly had an awful thought. She should come out to France to see him, talk things over. He'd had enough of feeling weak, of having people feel sorry for him. The paintings seemed to be spurring him on, their colours seeping into his veins. They gave him far more joy than pain, and it was then he knew he'd started to let go of Cherry. It was an uplifting moment. He left the shop with a new lightness. 31. Tuesday, June 16. What was she going to do? He was getting stronger by the day. Soon he would follow her home, and then it would be a matter of days before he bumped into Cherry, and everything she'd said would blow apart. Laura squirmed as she walked, her stomach so knotted she had to stop for a moment. How had she thought she'd get away with it? She must have been insane. Worry affected everything she did. She couldn't work, eat, sleep, without being consumed with a growing panic. Stopping outside Daniel's building, she took a deep breath, then again and again, puffing out her cheeks, trying to get rid of the sick sensation in her stomach. She held herself still for a moment, waiting for some respite, then let herself in. Daniel wanted to move back to the family home when he came back from France, at least to begin with, which suited Laura just fine. She liked having him around and had offered to go to his flat to get him some clothes. He'd also asked if she could get his laptop. She said hello to Ian, the porter, then checked Daniel's mail locker. Just a bit of junk. Most of his mail had dried up some months before. She went upstairs and opened the front door to a musty, stale smell, the summer sun having cooked the air inside many times over. Going into the bedroom first, she knew vaguely from his instructions what he kept where. T-shirt, shorts, underwear, a jacket he particularly liked. The room had a strange Marie Celeste feel to it. A glass of water left on the bedside table from the previous summer. A layer of dust on its surface. A pair of dirty socks on the floor. They'd had a cleaner come in a couple of weeks after the accident, but Laura had only instructed her to empty the garbage in the fridge. Everything else she had wanted left untouched. Hopeful it was only a matter of days before Daniel came round. She filled his clothes into a large bag he had stuffed at the top of the wardrobe. He also wanted some of his study books, as he'd been accepted back into the hospital training program, a year deferred. But he said he'd get those himself when he got back in 2 weeks. Only 2 weeks. What was she going to do? The cold sweat broke out again, and Laura hurried on, this time to the kitchen. Medical books and papers were left on the breakfast bar, some open. A newspaper from the previous August, yellowed in the sun. Daniel's laptop was also there, plugged in, and Laura was about to pick it up when she noticed its standby light winking. He mustn't have closed it down fully the weekend they left for Wales. Instead, just sandwiched the screen down. It was probably best she did it, before carting the laptop over to the house. Laura lifted the screen and it sprang back to life, a visual reminder of Daniel's life all those months ago, just before the accident. One by one, she closed them down. The Guardian newspaper, a site selling fancy mountain bikes, the weather in Wales. It felt odd, looking at a snapshot frozen in time, still lit up and yet forgotten about, and a lifetime ago. A medical site and then something else, a Twitter account. That's odd, she thought. Daniel wasn't on Twitter. And then she saw. It was Cherry's. The acidic bubbles erupted in her again. Cherry was going to bump into him, Laura knew it. She'd get back with him, and there'd be no stopping her this time. She'd take everything. Anxiety filled her, magnified by not knowing anything about Cherry the last few months. Where was she? What had she been doing? Laura couldn't help being drawn to her adversary, needing to know something, a battle-weary defendant's need to position the enemy before the final defeat. She looked at it again, and something sank in that she hadn't noticed before. The password box was filled with X's. All she had to do was click on the login button. She could find out anything she wanted, just by scrolling through. Her finger hovered over the key. It was wrong, an invasion of privacy, probably illegal. And then she had an idea.
She gasped, and the adrenaline made her sit bolt upright. It was brutal, disgusting, but it might get rid of her problem. She sat for a moment, taking quick, shallow breaths, not quite believing it. Clicked. But she didn't waste time reading the entries after all. Instead, she began to type. 32. Tuesday, June 16. Cherry sat at her desk and silently surveyed the office. Abigail and Emily stood side by side, gazing intently at a screen, checking the photographs of a new house they'd just taken on. She wondered why she'd never really bonded with them. Was it because they recognized a kindred spirit in each other's background? She didn't know, and was past the point of caring. They cooed over the glass staircase and roof terrace overlooking Hyde Park, and she despised them for it. It was pathetic, really, facilitating the buying and selling of some of the most expensive properties in London while getting paid a pittance to do so. Insulting, really, and all the time thinking that being in close contact with the houses themselves was a perk. You got to walk on hand-woven rugs and polished maple flooring, but 9 times out of 10 there was a clause in the contract saying it was imperative shoes were removed on entering. That was something Cherry would have done anyway, but being told to do so, like some serf who didn't know how to respect something of value, got her back up. The owners were all laughing at them, these people with their millions of pounds in the bank. Look but don't touch would be their motto, and others were to kowtow and gush and remain deferential or risk losing their business. It stank. It was also excruciatingly boring. Cherry had been there 1.5 years now. She felt trapped. It was as if her life was seeping away, valuable time and her youth leaking into the ground and disappearing. This scared her, and fueled the boredom further until she went round in demented circles, trying to work out what to do. This wasn't how it was meant to be. Daniel had been her escape route, and it had all been going so well. She still missed him, was still hurting from his death, and the pain was made worse by the fact she felt partly responsible. The life change, the plummet to the start of the chutes and ladders board, well, she had to take some responsibility for that. She'd done it to herself. If only she'd concentrated on that raft, if she hadn't hit him, he'd most likely be here now. They'd be living together, perhaps even engaged. She'd be well on her way to a life of freedom. Freedom. From drudgery and work and fear. For a moment, she imagined what it would be like to always have money, before the bitter taste of reality came back. Cherry recognized she was in a bad place. She'd been impatient, curt even, with a couple of clients lately, and Neil had overheard and taken her aside for a stern talking to. She boiled inside while he was speaking, but knew she had no choice but to toe the line. The ever-present cloud of Croydon loomed, its tendrils reaching closer to snatch her back to obscurity and a humdrum life with no prospects. She tried scouting for other men, a new boyfriend, but every single or potentially single man who walked through the door irritated her. They were all so self-important, barely looked at her, spoke to their friends as if she wasn't there, while she seethed and fretted and wished again that she'd never booked a whitewater rafting trip. Then there was Laura. She hadn't heard from her since March, when she'd called to tell her Daniel had died. No one had rung to make sure she was okay, that she was coping with her grief. No one had asked if she wanted to see the gravestone or whatever there was. Her insides corkscrewed with the hurt and humiliation of it all. 2 women were heading her way. She'd heard the door open, but hadn't bothered to look up. But now she realized that she was the only one who didn't look busy. She cast a resentful look over to Abigail and Emily, but they were oblivious. The women arrived at her desk. One was about 20 or 30 years younger than the other, and the older ones still looked impeccable. She guessed they were mother and daughter. Cherry took their details and listened to what they had to say about the apartment they wanted. The daughter needed a little pad for when she started university. They were looking now, as she wanted to try it out over the summer. She wanted a garden or preferably a roof terrace. There had to be a porter and a gym. It needed to be light and near to the King's Road, for she wanted to be close to the fun. There weren't that many that fit all her criteria. Cherry showed her one, then another, detesting this difficult-to-please, honey-haired, golden-limbed girl who was only a couple of years younger than herself. Judging by her skin colour, Cherry suspected she'd probably already had 2 or 3 holidays this year, and was now being offered every opportunity Cherry had craved, but had never had. University, independence, a mother she was close to, so much so they went shopping for apartments together. Jealousy stuck in her throat, and she wanted to snarl at her for being so spoiled, so self-involved, that she couldn't see how lucky she was to have a flat in Kensington. And who gave a fuck if it had black, not white, cupboards in the kitchen?
Surely her darling mother could fork out for a whole new interior if she whined about it enough. Instead she smiled, albeit coolly, and said in a bored tone that she only had one other to show her. She got it up on her screen, and this time the gushes poured out.
"Oh, I love it! Look, Mummy, it's got a cute little oven. I could learn to cook!"
Cherry flinched. She hated hearing grown women calling their parents Mummy and Daddy, and the cute little oven was atop of the line La Connue. Mummy smiled indulgently, amused, and Cherry knew the girl was one of these types who thought it was amusing to claim she burned eggs, and any attempt at cooking anything would have more focus on how she was adorably incompetent than actually putting any effort in.
"Can I have it? Can I, please?"
"If you ask me and Daddy round to dinner first." The girl squealed in delight. Cherry felt sick. She looked unabashedly at the clock. Thank God she would go home in 10 minutes.
"Can we look at it now?"
The mother had spoken and caught her unaware. "I'm afraid that's not possible." The lie didn't sound convincing, and the mother frowned.
"Why not?"
"Because I want to go home, and the thought of spending 1 minute of my own time taking you and your overprivileged daughter to a place I'll never dream of having in my entire life makes me want to turn this desk over," was what she wanted to say. Instead, she settled with, "We need to give the owners 24 hours' notice."
"But I thought you said the place was empty."
Cherry turned to the girl, so she had been listening. "Nevertheless, we do still need to let them know." The look of displeasure on the girl's face gave her a surge of satisfaction, of power. She felt a need to damage that self-appointed, God-given right and take something away, let her know what it felt like not to get what you wanted.
"Can't you just ring them now?"
Cherry stiffened. She didn't like the way she was being spoken to. "You need this job," she told herself quickly, plastering on a smile. She didn't see Neil making his way over from the back office, Emily just behind him. He addressed the clients first, all smooth charm. "Excuse me for interrupting, but Emily here can take care of your viewing. Cherry, would you mind just sorting something out in the office for me, please?" She stared, bewildered, but his arm was out, indicating the way, and she had no choice but to stand. The honey-haired girl gave her a mocking look as Emily slipped into her warm seat. Cherry felt the atmosphere change to one of obsequious wish-making as she followed Neil to the back.
"Take a seat," said Neil.
"What's this about?"
she asked, trying to regain some dignity, but still she sat down.
"I'm going to make this quick," he said, "as I think it might be better all round."
Her stomach flipped over. Was she in some sort of trouble?
"Your latest comments on the clients we have here. It's just not acceptable."
"That girl out there, she was a bit strident," defended Cherry. "Rude, actually, with me. Demanding. But I didn't say anything to her."
"Not her. Not anyone specific. Or perhaps everyone."
He leaned over to the desk, where a computer was lit up.
"Once again, my day is filled with arrogant, rich, wanker foreigners who seem to persist in wanting to buy the whole of London. I've had enough of them, throwing around their millions and taking all our houses."
He stopped reading and looked at her.
"You've even mentioned this agency by name in another message."
Cherry stared at him in horror, leapt up to see the screen, and realized he was reading from 2 tweets. Her tweets.
"But that wasn't me. I didn't write those," she said hotly.
He considered her a moment.
"It's your account."
"Someone's hacked in. It happens all the time. You read it in the papers."
"This is incredibly damaging."
"No shit. God, to think you think I wrote that."
"I meant to the agency. We've already lost a sale. A Chinese businessman has pulled out of a house that was due to close at the end of the week. Found somewhere else. With someone else. It's worth over 35 grand to us in fees, and I've just spent 30 minutes on the phone with a client trying to persuade her to keep her 2 apartments on with us. She declined."
Fear gripped her. She had to get through to him.
"But Neil, please. This wasn't me. You can't blame me for something I didn't do."
"I'm so sorry, Cherry, but I just don't think it's working out."
"No."
"It's not just this. I sense a general attitude change."
"My boyfriend's just died. And now you're firing me. I'll sue you."
"Or you can go quietly, and we'll pay you 2 months' salary."
It was paltry, insulting. She burned with rage.
"6. And a reference."
"3, and that's my final offer. Clients need to know they're welcome here, and they can work with us. And I'm sorry, but I think a reference is out of the question, given the circumstances. I think it would be best for us all if you could take your things home now."
Minutes later, Cherry barged defiantly down the street, not caring if she knocked into people. She got more than a few disapproving looks, but couldn't give a damn. Who had done this to her? Was it some joke?
Could it have been Emily or Abigail?
Then the tears came. She quickly swallowed to push them back. A hard pain formed in her chest. With no reference, she had very little chance of finding another job. No job meant no money to pay for her flat. She was going back to Croydon.
33. Monday, July 27. As usual, she woke at 6 a.m.
No alarms, just a useless habit, as now she had nothing to get up for. She would lie in bed wondering. Who'd done it? Nothing else had been posted. She'd closed her account, but the damage had been done. She would stay in bed, silently, until just past 7, so she missed her mother. She listened to Wendy turn on the shower, the dull drone of the hairdryer through the thin bedroom walls, the clink of the teaspoon in the mug, then finally the soft thud of the front door. Even then, Cherry didn't get up, not at first. She wanted to make sure her mum didn't come back for something forgotten, had enough time to get on the bus that took her to the vast supermarket 3 miles away. At about 7:20, Cherry got out of bed. It was a single, wedged against the wall of the small second bedroom. The covers were the same as she'd had when she'd lived there as a schoolgirl, pink and floral. The entire room was the same. The beige IKEA wardrobe with the shadow white doors, which sold in the thousands, cast-offs of it on eBay, not even fetching 99 pence. A mass-reproduced picture of New York on the wall, probably also from IKEA. Some tissues and a designed box. She felt the same stifling despair as when she'd lived there before. Cherry had had to serve notice on her flat after she'd been fired from her job. She'd packed up her belongings, and they were now rammed under the bed and at the bottom of the wardrobe in the tiny room, her last vestige of privacy. Most of her gear she hadn't bothered taking out of the boxes. There didn't seem to be any point. When Cherry had called her mother to ask, haltingly, if she could stay temporarily, Wendy had known better than to ask too many questions.
"There's always room for you here, love,"
she said kindly, but to Cherry the open words just sounded like a trap she could never escape. She'd mentioned something vague to her mum about redundancies, and Wendy had tutted, saying, "Bad luck." She had been extra sympathetic about Cherry losing her boyfriend and then her job in a matter of months. It was a real hard blow. Cherry had been living there 4 weeks now, and showed very little sign of getting a new job and getting out. The truth was, she didn't know what to do. She would spend her days walking down past Reeves Corner, where the ground was still flattened by the fire damage started in the riots, past the nail bars, the betting shops and the 99-pence stores, with their tartan plastic holdalls dangling overhead as you walked in. In the heat, the pavements themselves seemed to sweat, giving off a sour, sticky aroma. She walked incessantly, waiting to be inspired, an idea, a plan, something to tell her what to do. She wanted to feel driven again, to regain the focus and ambition she'd had 18 months ago when she'd started out at the agency. She walked until her mind went round in circles, past boards outside recruitment offices, taunting her with offerings such as administrator at £8 per hour. Dull, dead-end, menial jobs. Even Central Library couldn't motivate her. It seemed to be full of the unemployed and loafing students with big ideas but no willpower. She shouldn't be here with these freaks, these failures. She should be in a flat in Kensington, planning an engagement party. She burned with the unfairness of it all, the waste, the lost opportunity. She left the library and stood hopelessly outside, watching the buses accelerate past her. It depressed her, being aimless. She considered going farther, across George Street and down toward East Croydon Station. But then what? She couldn't afford to go anywhere, and where would she go anyway? She was trying to escape from herself. She turned back and started a slow walk back to the flat. Cherry tried to be home before her mother returned from work, not to welcome her, but because she felt she should earn her keep as she wasn't paying anything, and she needed the free board and lodging. She'd scour the fridge full of her mother's markdowns from the supermarket and make something for tea. Wendy always complimented her efforts too much, something that annoyed Cherry, for she knew it was an attempt to buoy her up.
"Oh, what have you made today?"
she'd say, opening the oven door and sniffing dramatically.
"You do spoil me. You've no idea how nice it is to have something cooked when you've been on your feet all day."
They sat down and Cherry made sure the conversation was geared around her mother's day at work, how many staff had turned up sick, what Holly's daughter was recording on YouTube, a ballad on guitar apparently, and whether the saucepan promotion had brought in more customers. Usually after this, Cherry washed the dishes while her mum watched EastEnders. Cherry hated to be in the room while it was on, It was another thing to drag her down to the lowest common denominator, and she preferred to be alone. Tonight, however, Wendy came into the kitchen. Cherry looked up in surprise. She could hear the theme tune coming from the living room.
"Aren't you going to watch your program?"
"In a minute, love." Wendy looked awkward, and alarm bells rang loud in Cherry's ears. Was her mum going to ask her to leave?
"I was thinking. You spending all day here alone? Can't be good for you. Especially with, you know, Daniel so recently gone."
Cherry stiffened, and her mother hurried on. "I hope you don't mind. I took the liberty of speaking to my manager. Told him a bit about you. How clever you was and all that. And, well, there's an opening coming up at work. In the technology and gaming department."
She said this last bit as though it was a real coup.
Cherry recoiled. Work in a supermarket? Was that all her mother thought of her? Wendy spotted her face.
"I know it's a bit different from what you was doing before, but you don't have to stay there for long. It could be a stopgap."
She was supposed to be engaged to a doctor with a trust fund, an heir to a multi-million-pound fortune and a villa in the south of France. Wendy took her silence as encouragement.
"Or you could work your way up, you know. They recognise talent and promote people quickly."
She'd rather die than work in that supermarket. Her confidence knocked to an all-time low, she dried her hands. She had to remain calm and civil, or living here would become intolerable.
"Cup of tea, Mum?"
"Lovely. So, what do you think?" Cherry pretended to think it over. "Maybe, but I want to try some other avenues first." Wendy smiled.
"Course, but if you want to talk to him, I can set you up a meeting." She snapped her fingers. "Like that."
"Thanks, Mum. Why don't I bring your tea in? You're missing your program." Wendy did as she was bid, and as soon as her mum left the room, a tear rolled down Cherry's cheek. She quickly brushed it away. Red eyes would only prompt questions. Taking the tea in, she feigned a headache and said she was going to lie down in her room. She lay on her bed and realized she'd reached rock bottom. Maybe you had to get this low to get your fighting spirit back, because she knew now she had to get out of there. The first stage was to forget about what might have been, stop looking back and thinking about where she'd be now if Daniel hadn't died. A vision of his flat came into her mind again, but angrily she pushed it out. She was done with it. It was time to forget about Daniel once and for all. He was gone. What she needed was closure.
34. Wednesday, August 12. The more time that passed, the safer Laura felt. She was even starting to forget. A day or two would go by and she'd realize she hadn't even thought about what she'd done. Sometimes, on a particularly good day, she could convince herself it didn't happen, distant like a dream. And time was continually moving on. Why, if this came out in 10, 20 years, their lives would have all changed so much. New jobs, new girlfriends. She and Daniel would laugh about it. Maybe. But it would certainly have lost its razor-sharp edge, which was getting dulled with every passing day, even if it wasn't quite quick enough for Laura. She'd gone onto the agency website 2 days after she'd posted the message and seen that Cherry's profile had been taken down, so she'd risked a call, asked to speak to her and had been told she no longer worked there. The relief was intoxicating. Even Isabella had noticed a difference in her.
"You look, I don't know, lighter, happier," she said at lunch, and took her hand. "You've had a hell of a year. Can't imagine what you've been through, and now look, he's back at home, healthy, recovered. No wonder you look so good."
Laura smiled and allowed Izzy to attribute her new well-being solely to Daniel's recovery.
"So can I tempt you to a bit of shopping now to celebrate?" "Is I have a job." "Darling, I know." She waved a regretful hand in the air. "I just think of all those afternoons wasted. Now you're in a better place."
She paused, and Laura looked at her suspiciously.
"He's early 50s, divorced. All his own hair and his own business. Does triathlons for fun."
She shuddered.
"I feel like sponsoring the poor lamb just to make it seem worthwhile."
Laura tapped her on the hand with her teaspoon.
"I have told you before, Howard and I are fine rattling along, albeit in our own dysfunctional way."
Isabella snorted.
"He's all right." "Sorry, I'm just protective of you."
"I sort of need him. I don't know why, maybe it's habit." All this elicited was a sympathetic squeeze of the hand. Knowing she'd pushed it far enough, Isabella changed the subject.
"So, what else is new with you?"
"Well, other than the new series with ITV,
I don't think I've congratulated you on that properly yet. You and Daniel. He's back at the hospital next week. Izzy clapped her hands. You're both very busily employed. The good news keeps on coming. Next door's building work is finished at last, thank God, so they can finally start the patch-up job on our pool window. This is all brilliant, and here's a bit of news for you. You know what's her name? Cherry.
Laura's chest tightened.
Well, you know my friend Angela, the one who still wears a size 6 bikini. She's selling her house. They're using Highsmith and Brown. Apparently Cherry's been fired, so she's gone for good. I still can't believe how badly she treated Daniel. I got her very wrong, didn't I? Sorry, Laura.
Laura smiled politely. She was just thankful it was all over. It was. It was, she reminded herself later. Not just Cherry, but what had happened to herself. The person she'd become, whom, looking back, she didn't recognize. It was as if someone else had done that thing, and it scared her, the length she'd gone to. Maybe now, knowing that Daniel was going to recover, she wouldn't have done it. But hindsight was a wonderful thing, and at the time all the medical evidence indicated that his days were numbered. She had genuinely thought she was spending her last few hours with him, and she'd been bewildered, heartbroken, and desperate. She more than likely wasn't thinking straight. Something must have flipped in her brain. It was best she forget and get on. But now that she had her sanity back, she knew something like this must never happen again. 35. Tuesday, September 15.
This is precisely the reason I've not yet moved back to my flat, said Daniel, as Laura produced a flaky chocolate croissant warmed in the oven.
Truth was, he didn't see a reason to move. In fact, he was beginning to wonder why he'd even bothered with it in the first place. Living at home was working out just fine, not because he got treated with breakfast every now and then, but he enjoyed the company. Both he and his parents worked long hours and irregular shifts, so it was a bit of a lottery whom he saw when, but that meant they appreciated their time together more. Always close to Laura, Daniel found he was getting to know his dad better too. He and Howard had ended up in the den a few nights ago with a couple of beers and a movie.
"It's cold out," said Laura. "You need an extra layer."
And it was. Autumn had started with a vengeance, and the wind was hammering against the window, the trees nearly already stripped, even though it was still only the middle of September.
"I think that could just as well be a sweater," said Daniel, wolfing down the croissant. "This is also bad for the arteries. You know I'm on the cardio ward, don't you, Mum? Hardly a great example for the patients."
"You're the picture of health," Laura beamed, squeezing his cheek. She just had time to flick through the paper before leaving for the office.
"So, what do you reckon?" said Daniel.
"About what?"
"Should we rent out the flat? I'll just stay here."
Laura put the paper down.
"You know you're always welcome, and I love seeing you the rare times you're not at the hospital. But it's up to you. I understand if you need your own space."
"Will you get me chocolate croissants every day?"
"Nope."
Could be a deal-breaker."
Laura stood.
"Hard luck. It's time I left."
Daniel leaned in confidentially.
"What's happening in this new series, then?"
"Can't tell you."
"Can't? Or won't?"
"Bit of both. I'm planning the finale this morning with the writer, and if I don't leave now, I'll be late."
The wind blew her sideways as she crossed the road to her office, and Laura laughed, a spirited, delighted laugh that was all the more noteworthy as laughter had been so scarce for so many long months. There was a joy reacquainting herself with happiness, simple pleasures, and she never tired of reminding herself of the most beautiful, exhilarating fact that Daniel was okay. She'd wake in the morning or be picking some apples in the supermarket or be supposedly concentrating in a pre-production meeting and say it to herself, and an explosion of fireworks would go off somewhere inside her. He'd returned from France looking more or less his old self. More important, he sounded like his old self, happy-go-lucky, and his ambition had returned. If anything, it was stronger than before. While he'd been away, he'd arranged his place back at the hospital for his foundation year one. He said he felt as if he'd been given a second chance. Something had happened when she'd left him to come back to London. He'd struck up a friendship with a local woman who ran her parents' business. Laura had met her briefly one weekend when she was out there. Vivian had stopped by, and she and Daniel had gone out for a drink. She was at least a decade older than he was, had the confidence that came with it, and no time for self-pity. He wasn't one for wallowing, but her no-nonsense spirit had accelerated his recovery. He'd come back tanned, relaxed, and somehow a bit tougher. Laura buzzed herself into her building and walked up the stairs to where Willow sat outside her office. She was her new PA and eager to please.
"Your visitor is here," she said. "I showed her into the meeting room."
The writer was a little early, but that was fine. Laura was looking forward to the session. It was one of the most fun stages of developing a drama, making up the stories, and the writer was smart and imaginative. Laura went over to the meeting room and opened the door. Cherry was sitting at the round glass table, flicking through a magazine.
"Hello, Laura."
In a state of utter shock, Laura said nothing. "I suspected it might be a bit of a surprise to see me, but not an unpleasant one." Panic overtook her, and Laura quickly turned away and closed the door. Why is she here? She took a moment to try to compose herself before turning back around, made her voice as calm as possible, even though her heart was racing.
"Hello, Cherry. I'm afraid you've caught me at a bit of a bad time. I've got a meeting starting any minute now."
"Oh, well, I'll take that minute, if it's all the same to you." She didn't wait for permission. "It just became very important to see you. Since we last spoke, when you called me just after Mexico with the news. Well, all these months have gone by, but I've had a hard time accepting it." Laura didn't say anything. She still couldn't work it all out.
Think.
It had been, what, 6, 7 months? Cherry's hair was longer, which made her even more attractive, more sensual. Laura knew she had to keep calm. And then, when her writer arrived, damn Willow for not knowing the difference, she'd just have to politely but firmly ask Cherry to leave.
"Despite what you may have thought, Daniel meant the world to me."
Cherry's tone suddenly became harsh. "Why didn't you ever call to make sure I was coping okay?"
I'm sorry. I was just so caught up in my own grief."
"Yes, and I suppose you had the funeral to arrange as well. No, hold on. You did that when I was on holiday. Couldn't wait. What day did he die, by the way? I'd really like to know where he's buried, just so I can go and say goodbye." Laura was unnerved by the questions, coming without even a pause to hear answers. Cherry was watching her, and Laura was grateful she'd already thought some of this through.
"I'm afraid it was a cremation, and we took the ashes to France, which he always loved."
Cherry stared at her, and Laura looked away.
"I'm sorry, Cherry, but I really do have a meeting starting. Just one more thing."
Laura was beginning to feel impatient.
"Okay, so Cherry is probably grieving, but it's taken her all this time to get upset about it. What is it? If Daniel hadn't died, would you have been happy for us to be together?"
Laura stalled, tried an affectionate, exasperated smile.
"What kind of a question?"
"Oh, good. Because I always thought you'd do something to stop us. It's nice to know I was kind of part of the family, even if you didn't invite me to the funeral." Cherry stood.
"Thank you, Laura. This has helped a great deal. I just needed some sort of closure. It all happened so suddenly, and there was nothing concrete for me to see or visit. It just didn't seem real, you know?"
Feeling slightly sick, Laura nodded.
"I can see you're busy, so I'll be off."
Cherry stuck out her hand, and after a moment's hesitation, Laura took it. Then Cherry turned and left the room. Feeling shaky, Laura clasped the side of the table, loosened her scarf. She waited a minute or two to give Cherry time to leave the building. Then she went back to Willow's desk. There was no sign of her writer yet.
"If by 10 o'clock arrives, please take her to the meeting room. I'll be 2 minutes."
Willow nodded, startled by her boss's face, and decided it wasn't the time to tell her that the previous guest had gone into her office first, before being told that wasn't the meeting room. Willow had caught her rifling through some papers on Laura's desk.
"Oh, silly me,"
Cherry had said, and then followed Willow to the large room next door. Laura hurried back down the stairs. She pulled it off, but was still feeling shaken. She needed a coffee fix, a strong one, and there was an Italian cafe right across the road whose double espressos she'd turned to in the dark days of Daniel's illness to get her through the exhaustion. She pressed the door release to get back out onto the street and stepped onto the pavement. Then she yelped with fright. Cherry was standing outside, leaning against the wall. She smiled.
"Well, you saved me some time. I thought I was going to have to wait until you finished your day, and I was just wondering what to do with myself."
Laura stared at her, uncomprehending. Her mind was already confused by Cherry's sudden appearance, by her coming to the office. Cherry leaned forward.
"I know he's alive," she whispered.
Laura stammered.
"What are you talking about?
What kind of mother are you, who would lie about her own child's death?" She felt the blood drain from her face. The self-loathing was creeping back in. Cherry's voice turned hard. You tried to take everything away from me. I am going to do the same to you.
Laura gaped. Cherry held her gaze for a moment, her eyes cold, unforgiving. Then, when she was sure the message had been understood, she turned and walked away. Trembling, Laura watched her go. She tried to pass it off as a juvenile, silly threat. But there was something in Cherry's tone that had frightened her deeply. She instinctively knew that no matter how hard she might try, she wouldn't be able to dismiss it. Laura would be waiting, waiting and wondering what was going to happen.
36. Cherry knew that if Laura had been just that little bit more generous with her information, had told her all those months ago about Daniel's ashes going to France, phoned again to check she was okay, and allow her to ask which day he died, she'd never have called the hospital. Not the new hospital, of course. She hadn't even known about that one. No, the Chelsea in Westminster, where he was supposed to have had the fatal heart attack. Wary of calling Laura for the missing links, the information she needed to move on with her life, she called the ward. However, as she suspected, they refused to tell her anything, as she wasn't next of kin. Next came the racking tears. Then the claim that she didn't know when he'd died, because she'd been so traumatized by all the visits, by seeing him in a coma for so long, that she'd become ill herself and so had only found out through gossip that it might be the case. "Is he really dead?" she wailed dramatically, and then had asked for access to the hospital bereavement services, which she knew they weren't allowed to refuse. She also knew that once she was put through, she would get the information she needed. How could they cancel the bereaved without knowing the where and when? Instead, she'd been astounded to hear that Daniel hadn't died, so the bereavement services were not available to her. But they wouldn't tell her anything else. At first, she'd been so utterly gobsmacked, it hadn't sunk in. She was convinced they'd made a mistake, some silly yet appalling hospital error. For a brief moment, she wondered if she could sue them, and what the sums might be for psychological damage. Then she started to think about the possibility it was true. It was too big to ignore, so she'd gone to the hospital and waited outside the ward for one of the cleaners to come out, one she recognized from her vigil during all those early weeks, and whom she'd regularly struck up conversations with on her lonely afternoons. The woman had initially refused to be drawn out, but Cherry's 5 crisp £10 notes had helped. She told her that Daniel had been transferred to a private hospital, the Wellington in northwest London, sometime in late February. She wouldn't say anything else, but Cherry had enough. On calling the Wellington, she'd been told they couldn't give out any information, but he'd been discharged on May 26. If you were dead, you weren't discharged. The cold realization had started to form. She remembered the sudden funeral, the fact it was family only. It was all very convenient to tidy him away before she got back. At first, the idea popping into her head was so incredibly callous, so unbelievable, that she thought she must have made a mistake. No one hated her that much, she thought tentatively, but couldn't quite bury the wounded feeling that maybe, just maybe, they did. Amidst the hurt, she forced herself to face up to the possible fictitious scenario that had duped her. The only way to find out for certain was to confront Laura, so she'd gone to her office. The final confirmation came from watching Laura's face that morning. Just think, if she'd been a little kinder, a little more human, she'd have gotten away with it. She'd taken away everything that Cherry had worked hard for, cherished, aspired to, her whole raison d'etre, in one cruel, megalomaniacal swipe. Had Laura been laughing at her all this time, talking about the poor little Croydon girl who'd got ideas above her station? To think she'd tried so hard to be friends. How dare she, Cherry thought, how dare she think that because she has money she's better, that she could control the lives of other people? Cherry would not be humiliated again. It had taken all her strength when she'd seen Laura that morning not to fly at her, but that would have been a waste. Cherry wanted her to feel exactly as she felt, that sense of injustice and helplessness when someone just comes up and snatches away what you care about and grinds you into the dust with their heel while they're at it. No, Laura needed to be taught a lesson. Cherry also wanted Daniel back. She'd been given another chance, and this time she wasn't going to mess it up. No stupid whitewater rafting trips. She had to tread carefully. After all, he'd probably been told she'd given up on him, dumped him when he was in a coma. Her heart suddenly stopped. What if he'd met someone else? Oh, please, don't let that be true, she thought, and knew she had to get a move on. So between her two goals and the pressing urgency, she had a lot of thinking to do, a lot of planning to sort out. Her mind switched on, and it was a joyous feeling. Energy flooded through her for the first time in months. Her mum, home mid-afternoon after an early shift, was the first to notice the change.
"Have you got a job, love?"
"Yes, Mum, I have. A very important one." She was pulled into a bear hug.
"Congratulations, what is it?"
"Putting right a wrong." Wendy looked puzzled.
"Are you working for a charity?"
Cherry considered. Her mother might as well think this as anything.
"That's right."
"Good for you, love. It's about time more people out there did something for someone else. I'm thinking of doing the midnight walk, you know, for breast cancer. Do you fancy coming with me?"
"Think I might be a bit busy with the new job, Mum."
Cherry felt alive. This was the project, the focus she'd been looking for. She escaped to her bedroom and started by writing a list of everything Daniel had ever said about Laura, his parents, anything that might be of some value. She had an excellent memory, something she was particularly pleased with herself about, and had used to full advantage throughout her life. Once she'd been off from school for a few days with the flu, and the dreaded French verb test was the day of her return. All she'd had to do was scan the workbook while they were lining up to go in, and she knew the conjugations of souhaite, to wish, perfectly. When she was done with her list, there was quite a lot on it, some of it really useful. She was going to have a lot of fun, but the first thing she was going to do was see Daniel. Laura wouldn't tell him about her coming to the office, not immediately, because then she'd have to explain why, and that she couldn't do without admitting she'd lied about his death. No, she'd likely built herself up to it, but Cherry knew she wouldn't leave it too long, wouldn't dare to. She'd be too afraid Cherry would get to him first, so Cherry decided to make sure she did just that. She threw on her jacket and told her mum she was going out for some air. She walked the 10 minutes to Wandle Park and found a quiet bench. The park was quite busy with dog walkers, mums pushing prams, and some of the kids out of school, but it was still big enough for people to have their own space. No one came near her. Making sure she dialed a prefix that would hide her own number, Cherry phoned Laura's office.
"Hello, can I speak to Willow, please?"
A click and she was put through.
"Hello, Cavendish Pictures?"
"Oh, hi, Willow. This is Rachel Thornton, PA to Alison Forrest at ITV Drama." Such a good idea of hers to chat with Willow earlier when she'd gone to the office. She'd found out she'd only been there a few days, and it was her first TV job. It was unlikely that she'd be familiar with people's voices, and she was usefully green.
"I'm calling about the new life of Heather Brown." "Oh, I so love this project."
"Me too. It's one of my favourites on our slate."
"Really?"
Willow was delighted.
"Absolutely. Such a good script." "I can't wait to see it made,"
gushed Willow.
"You should ask Laura if you could come and visit the set." "Oh my God, I'd love that."
Cherry smiled. Willow was so trusting. "Listen, Alison's asked if Laura can come in for a meeting tomorrow morning. She's got some issues on the casting and is keen to lock it down ASAP. ITV was so helpful in putting all their executives' names on their website as they detailed their upcoming dramas. It had all been incredibly simple and hadn't stretched Cherry at all.
"She's got an hour between 10 and 11.
Willow sounded worried for the future of the drama. She was so unsuspecting. Cherry almost felt sorry for her.
"That's great. We'll see her then. Alison's out of the office and offline this afternoon, but any questions she'll answer fully tomorrow."
And that was it. Cherry just had one more thing to prepare for. She started to make her way back home to her mum's flat. It was time to open the boxes. 37. Wednesday, September 16. The next morning, dressed carefully in the electric blue dress that Daniel had bought her in France, the one that showed off her raven hair, Cherry made her way along Cadogan Square. As she turned into the front path of number 38, she felt herself grow heavy-hearted. She rang the bell. After a few moments, she heard footsteps coming to the door. It opened, and Cherry looked up and screamed. Then she fainted, falling halfway across the threshold. When she came round, Daniel had pulled her into the hallway and shut the door. She tried to sit up, but her head hurt. She'd hit it when she fell, something that she'd been prepared for. She stared at him in shock, still terrified.
"Are you all right?"
he said matter-of-factly. She was silent.
"What's wrong?"
"You're..." Daniel frowned at her.
"What?"
"Alive."
"Yes, last time I looked."
"I don't understand."
"Do you need some water?"
He sounded impatient, like he wanted to get on and for her to leave. She continued to stare at him, a hurt expression on her face. Tears welled up.
"You could have just told me it was over."
She struggled to get up and open the front door, but he put out a hand to stop her.
"What did you say?"
"If you didn't want to see me anymore, I could have handled it, you know, being dumped, No need to let your mum do your dirty work. Was it her idea or yours?
He looked baffled. What are you talking about?
So, what? You're just going to deny it now? Sorry, but I deserve better.
She got back some tears and tried again to wrench open the door. Cherry, will you please tell me what's going on? She stopped and looked at him.
Your mum! Telling me you were dead!
The hallway fell silent. Say that again. Cherry frowned.
She phoned me, back in March. She told me you died when I was away.
Daniel stared. She did what? Cherry felt it wasn't really necessary to repeat it. His face was fixed in utter astonishment. Cherry, do you have time for a coffee? She did. He started toward the kitchen.
Not here, though, she said quickly. If it's okay with you, I'd rather not be...
She looked around uncomfortably, and he understood. Let me just get my things. Put my work away.
May I use the bathroom?
Of course. Daniel disappeared into the hub of the house, and after a couple of seconds, when she could no longer hear him, she slipped upstairs and into Laura's bedroom. Closing the doors softly, she glanced at the desk and saw the notepaper she'd spotted on her tour, when she'd come for dinner all those months ago, embossed with Laura's name and address. Silently, she moved across the room, noting how the thick carpet muffled any squeaks or footsteps. She took a few sheets and slipped them into her bag, then seeing a handwritten note, something about a woman having a strenuous time looking after her grandchildren, she took that too. There must have been no more than 2 or 3 minutes before she was back downstairs. Ready, said Daniel, appearing from the kitchen with his jacket. She nodded. They went to a coffee bar a few streets away. It was better that way. Laura would soon find out she wasn't required at ITV Towers, and Cherry didn't really want her barging in on them. He sat and listened while she told him what had happened, awkwardly, of course, as it would be difficult to hear, and she didn't want to hurt his feelings any more than she had to. She tried to keep it brief. She tried to be careful. There was still a long way to go. He didn't say anything for a while. Then he rubbed his face in his hands. When he looked up, he was just as bewildered. Why didn't you ask to go to the funeral or something? The insinuation was that she could have worked harder to flush out the lie. I did. She said it had taken place when I was away, and there was no gravestone as your ashes had gone to France. He stiffened, and she knew it must be hard hearing how your mother had discussed your own funeral. He picked up his teaspoon and slowly stirred his coffee without looking up at her. I'm sorry you had to go through that. She nodded. It took me a long time. Well, I never really got over it. That's why I went to your mum's office yesterday. I was just desperate to talk to her, hear about what had happened after you'd... You know. You went to her office. She didn't mention it, Cherry countered. Well, no, I guess she wouldn't. Silence lapsed for a moment. Are you okay? Why did you come to the house? She noticed that he wasn't opening up to her yet. I came to bring her these. She opened up her bag and pulled out an envelope. Inside were some photographs. It's our trip, the whitewater rafting. I just thought she might like to see the last photos of you. He took them in his hand. There they were, the two of them laughing and screaming as they hurtled down the river. Cherry had dug out the pictures the night before from the boxes stashed in the wardrobe. They'd been taken by the professional photographer, and she'd got them from the centre a month or so after the accident for her own memento. She had a sudden surge of conscience. I hope they're not too upsetting, she said quickly, because of the accident. No. He looked at her. It was a nice thing to do. She gave a small smile. So, when did you wake up? March, a few days after she called you. When I was fit enough, we went to France. Better recuperation. Warmer. You look really well. He nodded, accepting the compliment. Can I ask what she said about me? About why I'd stopped coming to the hospital? She didn't go into much detail. Just made it sound like you'd left a long time before. Cherry's face crumpled. I know we didn't always get on, but I didn't think it was that bad. His face was set in a stony expression. She sat awkwardly for a moment, and he saw and seemed to snap out of his mood. He sat up a little straighter, focused a small smile on her. Are you still studying? She asked. I'm back at the hospital. They've given me another place.
That's great.
Yeah. You?
I noticed you'd left the agency.
It didn't really work out. He looked surprised.
No.
No, things got a bit... My mind wasn't really on it. She shook her head, not wanting to go into it further.
Hang on. Was this because... of me? Of what you'd been told?
That is sort of true, thought Cherry.
Here was another thing she could hold Laura accountable for.
She gave him an awkward smile. He exhaled in irritation, and she could tell he was biting his tongue when it came to his mother.
I think I owe you quite a bit.
She grinned. I'm just glad you're still here.
Must have been quite a surprise when I opened the door.
Yep. They both remembered her faint and laughed.
So, what else have you been up to?
He asked. Not much. I'm staying with my mum at the moment.
Send her my best. Explain I'm alive first.
I will. How about you?
Just got my head down. Doing the hours.
They looked at each other a moment. Heart in mouth. She spoke first. Did you meet anyone else?
No.
He paused.
Did you?
She'd heard the hope in his voice. She smiled and shook her head. 38. Wednesday, September 16. It had started out as a morning of studying. Daniel still thanked his lucky stars that his memory hadn't been affected, and he had mercifully retained 5 years of medical school. There had been a note for him when he'd gone downstairs. Need to speak to you. We'll be home this afternoon. Can you be around? Mum. Kiss. He'd got into his books over his toast, and the time had melted away, unnoticed, until the doorbell had rung. He remembered he'd been annoyed at the interruption, and had gotten up thinking it was hopefully just the postman. When he'd first seen Cherry standing at the door in the striking blue dress, which he remembered from their trip to France, she made something leap up in his chest. But he quickly reminded himself she'd left him. Then she screamed and fainted, something that he found both baffling and annoying, although this could have been due to its arousing a sense of chivalry in him that he oughtn't to feel. The news, when he heard it, didn't make sense at first. He couldn't understand it. He tried to think of every reasonable explanation, but the thing he kept coming back to was that his mother had lied. She'd made up a story about him dying. Gradually this notion tunneled its way into his brain and sat there, refusing to leave. To make things worse, he realized that she'd not only made